Today we're going to just a little bit in our class, in our class on the New Testament church. We have been focusing upon two primary areas, the nature of the church. And if you remember, we talked about the nature of the church from several different aspects. We identified that God calls His New Testament church, or He refers to His New Testament church as the called out ones. That's the very definition of the ideal church, is that we've been called out. And certain passages indicate that we have been called out of the kingdom of darkness, and we've been translated into the kingdom of His dear Son. Passages such as Colossians chapter 1 and verse number 13 would be a passage that you would probably want to have down, as well as a few others. But that's certainly one of them that you would want there in relationship to that nature of the church. We are called out. By the way, being called out means that we have been separated from the world, from the old man, from the carnal thoughts, from the wickedness that is in the world, and we've been called out for our service toward God. So we've been called out of darkness into light. We've been called out of wickedness into righteousness. And you could go on with those analogies, but it's a calling out that you and I have accepted in regards to what makes us as members of the body of Christ or the Church of Christ. And so there were some other phrases that are utilized in the New Testament, such as the household of God. You remember some of the other ones. The New Testament describes the church as the household of God. It describes it as what? The bride of Christ. Yes, ma'am. The bride of Christ. What else? And by the way, with each one of them, there is a particular concept that God is driving at. See, with the bride, you turn to Ephesians chapter 5, and you have that analogy lined up there. So as a woman is submissive to her husband, so should the bride of Christ be submissive to her husband. And remember that Paul would say in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, I have espoused you unto one husband. One husband, you see. And so there are concepts that go along with each one of them. What else? Okay. By the way, if you look at it individually, you have words such as disciple, follower, disciple meaning pupil or student. You have a follower. You have a saint. The word Christian comes to mind at that particular point. Being like Christ and following Him. And so you have terms such as that would describe us individually. But collectively then, we would be referred to as the household of God, the family, by the way. And that's what that, when we're talking about the household, we're not talking about a physical structure. We're talking about, remember that old song, right? Some of you ladies, maybe even some of you gentlemen taught that, right? Is this the church? Oh, no, 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 a building with a steeple. Oh, excuse me, this way, because you got to go, is this the church? Oh, yes, yes, yes. The church is Christian people, right? And so we sometimes we need to remind ourselves of those beautiful things we learned as a child, or those beautiful things we're teaching our children in regards to the fundamental basic concept of the New Testament church. What else? I'm sorry? The temple of the Lord, right? The temple of the Lord. What's the purpose then of a temple? What takes place in a temple? Worship, right? And so we have a high priest. He also is the sacrifice that allows us. He is the mediator, and so He is offering Himself as that sacrifice, and there is worship that takes place. Now, worship under the Old Testament was a designed activity. It was not a free-for-all, and worship under the New Testament is a designed activity. It's not just a free-for-all. All right, what else? Okay, the Israel of God. Now, that's an interesting terminology. What was the relationship of Israel to God in the Old Testament? I'm sorry? Chosen people, a special people. We might tie in, what is it, Deuteronomy 5 or is it Deuteronomy 7 with 1 Peter chapter 2, where he talks about verse number 9, us being a peculiar people. You see, that is the same, that's the Israel of God, you see. We have that special relationship with God. And the Old Testament, no one else had that kind of relationship that Israel did. Prince of God. That's good. That's good. The Prince of God. And by the way, Revelation chapter 1 and verse number 5 talks about our activity in the kingdom of God as princes. In other words, there's a special relationship that goes on here. We're not just thugs running around in the street in the kingdom of God. There's a special relationship that we have. I like that terminology, yes. We are royal priesthood. Don't you love that terminology? Nobility, I like that. We have a calling that is noble. That's a beautiful expression there, royal priesthood. So, with the ideal of the worship activity of the temple of God, we are priests carrying out that activity of worship. Beautiful. Then we talked about, and by the way, there are a dozen other phrases that God uses to describe the New Testament, the nature of the New Testament church. But let's move on to our last series of lessons, which revolved around the origin of the church. And by origin, we're really dealing with two concepts. Raphael dealt with one, and then I dealt with the other. The origin of the church really revolves around the question of when. When did the New Testament church come into existence? Raphael took through some of the Old Testament kingdom indicators. Brother Wallace referred to as Pentecost pointers. The timing of the church. By the way, this is an important concept for us to grasp and to really lay our minds to this. It is that which will separate us from the discussion of everyone else. When you can demonstrate and show in the minds of people that you're teaching that, for example, the Baptist church did not come about until the 1600s by their own admission. Okay? And you can show them that some churches came into existence or claimed they came into existence later than Acts chapter 2. Then you got a problem with that church, see? The timing of that is prophetically announced. And so then you have to say, well, maybe the prophets didn't know all of these things. And you know, my response is, from just a human perspective, I agree, those prophets may have not have known a lot of things. But 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 20 and 21 says that these men were moved, or that they wrote their documents, not by the will of men, but by the will of God. You really think God couldn't see down in the valleys from His perspective? You see, and so the origin of the church, when we talk about timing, that is a vital doctrine for us to really understand. Now, yes, sir. Volunteer, I like that one. Mm-hmm. Yes. By the way, I love that word, but I want to show you how sometimes that word gives us a false concept. And I want to use your analogy. This is, by the way, this is an excellent analogy. When those boys What would it have been, 40, somewhere around the early 40s to mid 42, 43, began to go and volunteer. When they signed their name on that, and they went to the drill sergeant, and the drill sergeant got up in their face, and the drill sergeant was training them and molding them and shaping them, do you think maybe some of those guys wanted to back out of that volunteered status that they had? Certainly they did. But could they? See, here's how we look at a volunteer today. Listen, I'm a volunteer for the church, so don't tell me what to do. I'm a volunteer for the church, so don't challenge me, don't direct me. I'm a volunteer, you see. As if you can volunteer and unvolunteer for the church any day that you want. No, see, this is something that's signed in blood, right? I mean, Jesus signed his contract in blood, right? Now, I have to be careful because Omari just took it to the cross every night, so I have to be careful here. But we sign in blood as well, do we not? When we submit to water baptism, we contact blood. And so it is volunteers. But this is an army. By the way, that's one of the illustrations we didn't go to. This is an army. And you can be AWOL in an army, but you don't get to just say, I'm a volunteer in this army. I don't want to go to Asia. I think I'll go to Europe, right? I don't want to serve under Patton. I think I want to serve under, and choose, Bradley. Well, he's England, right? But I want to serve under who I want to serve. You see, it just doesn't work that way. But that's kind of the way we treat the New Testament church. And what I'm saying is, that's a shame that we have that mentality about the church when it should be a stronger commitment than even our boys had in World War II concerning those items. Well, by the way, we could choose any war. Yes, sir. We could choose any war. We could go back to many different ones, but I guess this is a good thought. Sometimes we leave World War I out because World War I ended in what is that called, an armistice agreement, where we just both sides agreed. It was equals agreeing, and we just stopped the conflict. My grandfather fought. In the latter parts of World War One, grandfather fought in the latter parts of World War One, and it's interesting to me that we didn't even have a memorial to World War One until just a couple of 10, 15 years ago, that kind of got set on the side. But World War Two was a little bit more decisive. It was what do they call that? Starts with an S. Suzerain agreement, that is a treaty where the greater determines and dictates all to the lesser, right? Germany and Japan was unconditional surrender. And so it was a different kind of treaty. That may have something to do with it. Yes, sir. Yeah, it didn't quite do it, did it? Alright. But here's what you have. You have individuals who volunteer, individuals who give their life and service, and we respect that, we appreciate that, we value that. But at the same time, let's not forget that we are in a greater service, we are in a greater battle for a more serious, item than just landmass. Right? Our battle is for the souls of men, not for the flesh of men, and not for landmass, but it's for the souls of men. It's not just for a time here, but it's for eternity. And by the way, that brings us into our lesson today, when we're talking about evangelism. Today we're going to begin a of lessons talking about the work of the church. And so if we're talking about the work of the church, then if I was to ask you, What's the purpose of the church? If I was to ask you about the concept of the mission of the church, why we are here, there are several biblical statements in the Bible that would explain this. But how would you if I think it's called an elevator. Can't remember the word, but if you're on an elevator going up, let's say 15 stories, and somebody asks you, what do you do for a living, your vocation? You have just a few seconds to describe for them what you do. How would you describe that if you're talking about who you are as a Christian? I involve myself in seeking and saving the lost, right? We could look at many passages. Luke 19:10 is certainly one of those that come to mind with reference to Jesus. He went about seeking and saving the lost. We're certainly going to attach ourselves to His mission, right? We're going to be involved in that same activity, or at least the same mission that He had. Yes, ma'am. Okay. To speak out against sin. Well, I like that. To speak out against sin, to do good, and to edify the saints. Beautiful mission statement, right? You got about 30 seconds, you got about a minute, and so somebody says, well, what do you do? Well, this is what I do. I'm a Christian. You might say, well, I'm a Christian. They say, well, what is that? Well, right? I speak out against sin. I do good. And what was the third one again? I edify the saints, right? I edify my brethren. Yes, sir. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, you might approach it from, I'm a volunteer in the Lord's army. I'm a volunteer but what do you do now as a volunteer? Okay, I fight the good fight. There you go. What else? Now, if I was to ask you, what is the work of the church? What would your answer be? Okay, preach the word, save souls. The work of the church. Okay, we're going to obey God. We're going to keep His commandments. Glorify Christ? Somebody else? Okay. By the way, all of those statements are absolutely true, aren't they? They're right out of the Bible. They're telling us what we are engaged in. Now, we have collectively honed those things down to three areas, right? All of those things we have said that the work of the church falls under three specific areas: evangelism, edification, and benevolence, right? Glorifying God. Through that means, then, by being what we're supposed to be, by doing what we are supposed to do, by speaking out against that which we're supposed to speak out, then we glorify God, right? Somebody turn to 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse number 9. We alluded to that passage earlier. Mike, would you get Ephesians chapter 2 and verse number 10? I have a feeling that your mind was wrapping itself around that anyway. So Ephesians chapter 2 and verse number 10. Who has 1 Peter 2 and verse? Let's start at verse 5 and then let's drop down to verse number 9. Both of those are purpose statements. We are something that, and then there's the purpose statement behind it. Verse number 5. Okay, hang on. Just verse number 5. Okay, just verse number 5 suggests that we are involved in this temple. That what's the purpose of that, Jerry? That we might offer spiritual sacrifices. Does that not draw your mind somewhere? Somebody help me out. Okay, to the sacrifice of Christ. But as far as our sacrifice, does that not draw your mind somewhere? I realize that it's dangerous if your mind is working like mine. Okay? But does that not draw your mind to Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2? That we are a living sacrifice, you see? And there's a not to be conformed to this world, but to be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may, what? That you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You see, so I am a living sacrifice. Now, in regards to that, that sacrifice that I'm engaged in is a sacrifice that I'm living out for the purpose of... drop down to verse number 9, Jerry. Okay, hang on a second. Real quick over that little bitty four-letter word there. That. Did you catch? That. Okay, here's what God made us. Now, why did God make us this way? Why are we what we are? That what, Jerry? And the word praises there, we've discussed this before, the word praises there, actually go back to chapter 1 and verse number 5 beginning. It's the virtue. You see, we are what we are so that we might show people the very virtue of God. That's why we should be holy, and that's why we should be separate and apart from sin, you see, so that I can show the world the very virtue of God, who God is. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Here's how the Levitical writer refers to it. The blind, the broken, the maimed, having a wind or scurvy, scab, shall ye not offer these unto the Lord, nor make an offering by fire of them upon the altar of the Lord. Now, he has more to say in the context, but that's Leviticus 22 and verse number 22. You see, you don't offer that. In fact, if you go back to Leviticus chapter 1, here's what you will find. You are never to offer God anything that does not cost you something. That bullock that you're offering, it costs you something. If you're giving the cheapest thing that you can to God, when God gave the greatest thing that He gave to you, then there's something wrong with either your or my sacrifice, right? And so, very good point. Yes, ma'am. Good point. Yeah. That's right. Absolutely. That's an excellent point. And the completeness of that volunteer spirit must be that I'm fully in. You see, and that's the die daily. That's the transformation by the renewing of your mind to be that living, holy, acceptable sacrifice. And it's acceptable to God, right? That's the whom, that's the object of our affection. We're trying to please Him, right? In that. Yes, sir. It should, right? If I have that mentality, it's going to cut that out, isn't it? You're absolutely right. All right, so Ephesians chapter 2 and verse number 10 also is a purpose statement. He's talking about the fact that we have, beginning in chapter 2 and verse number... Well, chapter 1 is all about the blessings that we received. All of those blessings. This is who we are. We are the called out ones. We are the predestined ones. We are the blessed ones. We are the ones who receive the mystery of God. We are the resurrected ones, right? Chapter 2 and verse number 1. By resurrection, we were dead in our trespasses and sins, but God, who is rich in His mercy, you see, He has, that's chapter 2 and verse number 4. Now you get down to chapter 2 and verse number 10, and He says what? Now that's who we are, right? We are His workmanship. Anybody do anything that requires workmanship, woodwork, metalwork, something like that? Where art? Anybody do anything like that? No. Pitiful bunch y'all are. Pitiful. No. No. I definitely have. I'm a pitiful part of this group. But you've seen people, right? I have watched people at fairs, or I've watched them at different places. They will take a chainsaw to a tree and make something that I couldn't do it with any ounce of effort in my body. And they'll do it with a chainsaw. I mean, they'll make a bear come out of that tree with a chainsaw, and it will have awesome detail in it. You see His craftsmanship, right? See, we are the craftsmanship of God. That means that when people look at us, going back to 1 Peter, they should be able to see the virtue of God in us, in His craftsmanship of us. So that's who we are. Now, go ahead there. For what? Good works. That goes back to what you was talking about earlier, as far as trying to explain to somebody who we are. We do good works, right? The early church participated in benevolence. The ministry of the church was a ministry to the poor. It was aid and effort to those who could not help themselves. The church was vitally, or was involved in that effort. Alright? So, we are His creation. We are created unto good works. What's the rest of that read? Okay, that we should walk in them. Whatever He made us to be, whatever He asked us to do, that is what we ought to be and do. That is the purpose statement. You see, now, whether or not we're talking about evangelism, that needs to guide our evangelistic efforts. Personally and collectively, I need to have that mentality in my mind that my job is to glorify God. My job in this effort of evangelism is to show people the virtue of God, the praises of Him who called us out of darkness into His marvelous light. You see, that's my job in evangelism, personally and collectively. But that's also my job when it comes to edification. You know, isn't it interesting that sometimes we'll talk about evangelism and we'll talk about personal evangelism and collective evangelism? I don't recall ever really emphasizing personal edification and collective edification. Normally we just talk about, well, we're to edify the saints, and we talk about the assembly of the saints as a means by which we edify one another. What we'll learn in our lesson, hopefully, not just learn, but maybe we'll refresh our minds toward, is that edification is not just an assembly item. Now see, the Lord's Supper is solely an assembly item. It's not something taken out of the assembly. It's solely an assembly item. We'll get to that when we talk about worship. But edification is not just, it is an assembly item, but not just an assembly item. Hebrews chapter 10, right, verse 24 and 25, that's the purpose of that assembly, the ideal of bringing glory to God, but the ideal of strengthening one another. Oftentimes, just by your presence, you are a strength. Now, there's more to it than just that. We need participation, right? Now, Jerry, you leading singing this morning? Okay, so if Jerry gets up and he starts leading singing, and he's the only one leading singing, he's going to stop in just about, well, maybe the first line, right? And then he's going to say, hello, I'm not here. There's no participation today. This ain't a solo. Let's go, right? Come on, right? That's exactly right. So that participation in that is designed for us to do what? Strengthen one another. Yes, ma'am. You know, and that describes both of those items, doesn't it, of evangelism and edification. How you treat people. For example, you go to the restaurant and you treat your waiter or waitress horrible and you leave her a penny for a tip, then try to invite her to the gospel meeting. Or him, either one. No. See, you have insulted them. You have demeaned them. You have treated them as if they were a subservient to you. I realize service is one thing, but isn't that what Christianity is all about? If anybody should understand the value of service and how difficult it is at times, should it not be us as Christians? Yet I have seen Christians treat people who serve them horribly. We probably ought to think of them as an evangelistic opportunity rather than just somebody who's bringing me my bread. And by the way, why is that bread late? Okay, the bread may be late, but is the bread that important? Shake your head no, please. It's not that important. Okay? You may be on a tight time schedule, and that waiter or waitress is going to make you late for a very important. Which is more important? You not having your lunch that day on time or that person's eternal soul? All right. You can't make that a quick thing. You're going to have to explain it now. Mm-hmm. I like that. Right. That's right. Should be that. I like that. That's exactly. So we got to be careful of molding who we are, right? That's. I like that. Generally speaking, there are very few people who get up in the morning and say, "I get to go to work." Now, you do, by the way. There are a lot of people who might not get to do that, but you get to go to work. But generally, we say, "I have to go to work," as if work is not the natural, but fruit is. The work of the flesh versus the fruit of the Spirit. Yes, sir. This is who I want to be. And so this is, I act the way I want to act in regards to that. And so, by the way, that means that if I am not who I ought to be, that it's not the outward man that needs to change. It is the inward man that needs to be altered. And once that is altered, it should be seen in our daily lives, right? And that goes back, right? That goes back to everything that we do becomes a part of evangelism and edification. So I can strengthen my brothers. This is Hebrews chapter 3 and verse number 12, right? I can edify my brethren on a daily basis. You see, every day. It might be a card. It might be a phone call. It might be, by the way, a chance meeting at the grocery store wherein you meet somebody that is a brother and sister in Christ, and you might spend a little time encouraging them. It might be somebody that is not as strong as they ought to be, and your words of encouragement will help to strengthen them in the most holy faith. But now, if you're saying, "Well, that's Sister so-and-so, she rarely shows up, I'm just going to keep on trucking down this aisle," then maybe we're not who we're supposed to be in regards to that. Yes. Yes. Yes, sometimes we'll talk about opportunities in that fashion, right? Sometimes I didn't plan on that, but it's there. God supplied me an opportunity, so why not utilize the gift of God in this opportunity in order to strengthen my brethren? And by the way, an item of edification does not necessarily have to be a 30-minute sermon either. You know, it doesn't have to be well, I've got to invite that person over to my house to have supper and spend 2 hours together. Sometimes it is that little opportunity. It is that little thing that we say, we sure are missing you at church. You know, is there anything that is keeping you away that I can help you with? It's just the simple. It's an opportunity supplied. It doesn't take 30 minutes. You know, you're not going to sit down in that aisle and have a Bible study necessarily at that point, but it's just the kindness and the consideration of the difficulty of maybe their life and your willingness to help them. Evangelism and edification are collective and they are personal. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Sorry. Yes. And by the way, that works in all three of those aspects, right? We've primarily focused on two, but it works with our ministry to the poor as well, right? I mean, our heart can become, Jerry and I have talked about this with reference to benevolence of people that come by. If you've ever been involved in helping people that just come in and need something, your heart can grow very cold if not careful. And so it is important then that we learn to keep that heart pricked. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody that knocks on your door deserves everything that you have either. That's not what the Bible teaches either. But it does always demand of me a soft heart, a tender heart, a genuine kindness and goodness, and for me to be able to see the big picture. Individuals may not always be worthy of the gifts that God has given us, and individuals might not always be worthy of the gifts that we give out. But I want to make sure that regardless of whether or not the answer is yes or no, or even maybe, I want to make sure that the tenderness of my heart is maintained. And I think that is very important in all of these aspects. Yes, sir. Whew. You can't ask that question with 1 minute left. That's a 16-minute answer. That's true. Yes, sir. Right. Yes. Right. Well, I think Mackie said he would take over and... listen, there are times in which if nobody else can step up and perform that service, then yes, obligation does. Did Jesus want to go to the cross? Want to. He wanted the outcome of the cross, but nobody wants to go to the cross. Even He Himself said, if there is any other way, let this cup pass. That tells you His desire was not to any brutality, and He did not want to endure that, but He would for our sake. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Right. That's exactly right. And so, and by the way, everything that we are talking about here stem from the very nature of God. Thus, it's either moral or not moral. And so, very good. Now, yes, sir. Right. Right. And by the way, and that's exactly what we're talking about here. Regardless of the response that we get back, we have to maintain our goodness toward those that need our aid and assistance. And that is difficult. It is not easy. So we have to watch the heart in regards to that. I think that's an excellent... Okay, the bell has rung 2 minutes ago. It's all Jerry's fault. We're going to blame... No. But listen, that's our next series of lessons. And by the way, consider Acts 5 as we close. I told you that evangelism can be personal and it can be collective. Edification can be personal and it can be collective. Ministry to the poor can be personal and it can be collective. Okay, we'll look at those. So, Think your thoughts today.